Hello, I'm Stephen Goodwin. It's Tuesday, the 23rd of October, 2007, and welcome to episode number 7 of The Beer Crate, a podcast for ale lovers the world over. Each week, we'll be looking at the world of beer and brewing, investigating local, national, and international breweries, and of course, tasting a wide selection of beers, ales, and ciders. Lager boys need not apply. Coming up on today's show, we have news, the drinker's diary. We ask, what is a free house? Discuss the differences between a pub and an inn, quick tastings, and our try before you die section. So, let's get cracking. News, and Green King were right. Last week, we reported that they had predicted record sales for beer during the rugby. According to the figures in front of me, 9 million fans headed towards the pub last Saturday, rising to 12 million for the England vs France game. In addition, Tesco sold 26 million bottles of beer for the stay-at-home supporter, as well as 500,000 packets of sausages and 200,000 steaks and burgers. There may be other news this week, but the rugby's the only thing anyone's talking about. Drinker's Diary. And as we come to the end of the year, there are fewer and fewer beer festivals to attend. One of the few is from York. The beer festival there runs from Thursday the 1st of November until Saturday the 3rd. You are advised to purchase tickets in advance, so we'll link you to the address in the diary section on the website. Also between the 1st and 3rd of November is the 21st Swindon Beer Festival, being held at the Steam Museum in Kemble Drive. If you're planning on attending on Friday evening, you must purchase tickets in advance. For all the other sessions, it's recommended, but not necessary. What is a free house? A free house is a British pub that is not owned by a brewery or breweries. Free in this context consequently means independent. The benefit is that it can provide its customers with any number of beers from any number of breweries without obligation. This is in contrast to a tied house, where the pub is owned by a brewery and leased or rented out to landlords. Consequently, a tied house will stock beer primarily from their own brewery. This is not to say that only that brewer's beer will appear there, since most places will usually stock Guinness, a cider, and a guest ale, but the primary ale selection will belong to the brewer. Some free houses are owned by large pub chains, such as Wetherspoons. Being part of a larger company, many of these landlords can negotiate good deals on beer, and thereby provide a selection as impressive as any of the family-run free houses you will find. Naturally, as with any large company, this is not true across the board, so check first. There is a third grouping, which has recently appeared, and that is of loan-tied pubs. This is applied to any privately owned pub where the brewery is involved in a loan to the pub. To stop breweries simply buying up pubs or converting free houses into loan ties, there is government legislation to stop this. I'll link the page in question in the show notes, but essentially there is a limit of 2,000 managed, tenant-tied and loan-tied premises. The same piece also indicates that brewers must publish wholesale price lists for their beers and not refuse to sell to free houses, thereby preventing monopolistic tendencies. So while you might be able to get a cheaper pint of Pride in one pub, it's not automatically true that it will be cheaper in a Fuller's pub. In fact, many independent pubs will source for more obscure breweries because they can get a better price. While this legislation has not eliminated the old prejudices about free houses, it has shown that the government has understood them and wants to do something about it. Pub, bar, or tavern. So a pub, or public house, to give it its full title, is not the only place we can get a pint. There are several variations, each with specific meanings. Today, we'll mention four of the main ones. Gastropub, brewpub, inn, and tavern. A gastropub is one that serves high-quality food with its beer. This is intended to be more of a restaurant fare and above the standard of pie and mash, which is typified by pub culture, and usually has fully qualified chefs to prepare the gastronomic feast. The word was first coined by David Eyre and Mike Belburn in 1991 when they opened the Eagle in Clerkenwell, London. It is similar in style to a French brasserie. A brewpub, as the name suggests, brews its own beer on the premises. The term microbrewery is sometimes used synonymously with brewpub, but there are differences, since the brewpub will ship its beer out to customers, and a brewpub will not necessarily do so. Originally, most pubs were brewpubs, but as the brewing industry began to become more organised, it became easier to buy beer rather than brew it yourself. Nowadays, a few specialist brewpub chains have appeared, such as the Porterhouse and the Firkin, but it is more usual to find them as private establishments. An inn has rooms for hire, and is a cross between a pub and hotel or B&B. It's distinguished by its inclusion of lodgings of some description. They first came about in Roman times, along with the inventions of roads in the modern sense of the word. Finally, it should be noted that, culturally speaking, American inns do not include lodgings. Finally, tavern. A great word, sadly fallen out of use, as it functions in the same way as a pub. That is, it doesn't provide lodgings, but it may serve food along with the compulsory beer. It originates from the Greek word taverna, meaning shed or workshop. And in the 13th century, taverns were kept by women known as alewives, and its most common usage now is probably in role-playing fantasy games, although apparently North Americans still use the term. Tastings. In this section, we give a brief yet discriminating summary of a number of different beers from around the world. All have been personally tasted and graded. Naturally, everyone has different tastes, and these are mine, so your mileage may vary. Pageant Ale, from Elgood's. Elgood's is a classic Cambridgeshire brewery, founded in 1795, and most famous for Black Dog, their Red Black Mild. Pageant is a pale brown best bitter, with sweetness and peppery hops. Unofficially, this is half mild, half bitter, half fizz, and half failed maths exam. The fizz does mercifully die quickly, giving way to a slightly spicy aftertaste brought on by the hops. This is followed with extra notes of herbs. It is very enjoyable, but it's not the best from this brewery. 7 out of 10. Marston Sweet Chariot. Another beer brewed for the Rugby World Cup. This is 4.8% and comes from Marston's Brewery from Burton-on-Trent, which is known for pedigree and old empire. Sweet Chariot, however, is a special beer and has an opening smell of spice, but when it's in the mouth, it pretends the smell never existed and the citrus, fruitiness and hops take over. Definitely has a second spicy aroma as you drink it and wins 7 out of 10. Pitch Black from Everard's. Everard's is an independent brewery that has its own selection of pubs, and they used to have one by my work. Alas, not any more, which has deprived me of my pint of Tiger every now and again. But no hard feelings, as Pitch Black is good. It's a dark stout with a strong bitter and roasted flavour, and it has a heavy, thin texture, which is nicely flat while drinking, but one that flares up when it reaches the back of the throat. This dies quickly and gives way to an aftertaste of roast that coats the mouth nicely. Brewed to 4.3%, and to celebrate the 2006 Rugby World Cup, I'd celebrate with Everard's on producing this 8 out of 10 beer, although the initial burnt smell is not perfect, which forces me to award it just 7.5 out of 10. Angel Witch. I found this 3.8% beer at the Bedford Beer Festival recently, but I haven't been able to find any further information about beer or brewery since the notes I made were illegible. So if anyone listening knows about this, please email me. Angel Witch is a typical dark amber beer with a transient aftertaste, but it does hold a thin coating on the rear of the tongue that feels out of place considering the rest of the flavours have already gone. Definitely better as a quaffing ale, and the sudden rush makes you realise why you like beer. I award it 6 out of 10 if you sip it, and 7 if you gulp. Try Before You Die. In this section of the show, we will cast a discerning eye over the best beers that this world has to offer. We shall mention its history, the brewery behind the beer, and why we feel this is a superior brew worthy of your attention. This week, Brax Beer Triple. This is a bottle-only heavy ale, and was created to celebrate the return of Brax Beer to Oxfordshire in 2005. At 7.2%, this is a complex beer with many flavours, with nuts in both taste and on the nose, where it is joined with soft caramel and malt. I think it is very much how the English would reinvent Chimay if they were to try, as it has many of the old-style qualities and strengths of the aforementioned Trappist ale. The process of this beer is, as the name suggests, triple, as it is fermented 3 times, with 3 injections of hops at 3 stages of the process. The final process is the maturation in the 500ml bottle, each of which is uniquely numbered. The most recent batch was bottled on January the 15th of this year, and has the numbers 509,920 to 544,474, a thoroughly useless but amusing piece of beer trivia. Being such a dark beer, there is a limit to the foods you can have with it. However, the Braxbeer Triple has won awards in this category, being voted the best beer to drink with blue cheese. Despite being brewed under the name Braxbeer, their beer has been brewed by the Witchwood Brewery since 2002. This is famous for the hobgoblin character and beer. But they'd always wanted to move back to Oxfordshire, and in 2005 they refurbished the brewery in Witney and created Braxbeer Triple in honour. In addition to Triple, there are two other main beers, Braxbeer Bitter and Braxbeer Organic Beer, both available in bottles and on draft. The Bitter is a 3.4 red amber beer with a toffee aroma and fruit and hop and malt nose. The Organic Beer comes in at 4.6%, yet is light and fresh, it's zesty with a fruity flavour, and, unlike the other beers, it uses a cold filtration system rather than finings to settle all the beer. Additionally, Witchwood produce a number of seasonal ales. Bottled ale drinkers are the winners with Braxbeer, since it's usually easier to find their beers in supermarkets than pubs, and they're just as good, which is why Braxbeer Triple is this week's Try Before You Die. Okay, that wraps it up for this week. To give us a tasting of your opinions, you can email us on thebeercrate@gmail.com. If you prefix the subject line with two colons, you can be sure to avoid the spam filters. Remember to enjoy everything from the Beer Crate safely and responsibly, so you can be back here with us next week. Until then, cheers. Has been released under the Creative Commons Attribution, No Commercial, No Derivatives version. See www.thebeercrate.com for details.